Welcome to Simply Scottish, a podcast of all things Scottish, with music, features, interviews, and more. On the web at www.simplyscottish.com.
Welcome to Simply Scottish, 30 minutes of Scottish culture, history, and music. I'm your host, Andrew McDermott. Thanks for joining me today. We opened with the rousing bagpipe sounds of Sour Patrol from their latest album, Outlander. We'll hear more from them in just a minute. On this episode, part 2 of my 10 favourite Scottish destinations. Join me on this two-part series as I take you to 10 of my favourite places in Scotland, from the borders to the islands. Find part 1 and other episodes of Simply Scottish on our website, simplyscottish.com. The show is also available on iTunes and is syndicated 6 days a week on the Celtic Radio Network at celticradio.net. Join our listener community online and get show updates, Scottish news, pictures, and a chance every month to win some of the music you hear on the show. Find us at facebook.com/simplyscottish or twitter.com/simplyscottish. Also on the show, a look at Scotland's role in the Commonwealth Games, courtesy of Scottish Memories magazine. Each issue of this magazine includes feature articles, reader recollections, travel information, and more. Subscribe to Scottish Memories at celebrate-scotland.co.uk. It's also available as a digital edition, with episodes of Simply Scottish built right in. Get details at www.celebrate-scotland.co.uk. Let's kick things off with music. Here's Sour Patrol again with Outlander, the title track to their 2014 album.
Thank you.
In part one of this series, we started our journey in Scotland's beautiful Borders region with a visit to the idyllic village of Yarrow Ford. From there, we travelled to the peaceful ruins of Dryburgh Abbey before heading north to the coastal town of Dunbar. After a visit to John Muir's hometown, we entered the capital for a visit to St Giles Cathedral, the High Kirk of Edinburgh, followed by a walk down to Prince's Street Gardens, Edinburgh's best-known public park, and a delightful escape from the hustle and bustle. Today we complete the itinerary with five more of my favourite places in Scotland. From Edinburgh we head northwest on the M9 motorway to Stirling. Historically it was said that he who holds Stirling holds Scotland. Indeed, Scotland's youngest city, it received the designation in 2002, boasts a millennium of history. Once Scotland's capital, it was home to some of Scotland's greatest monarchs and the site of epic battles involving heroes like William Wallace and Robert the Bruce. Stirling serves as the gateway to Scotland's first national park, Loch Lomond and the Trossachs National Park. Many visitors use the city as a base for exploring the southern highlands. The jewel in the crown of Stirling is its castle, Scotland's second most popular. Historic Scotland recently completed a major multi-million pound renovation of the castle's properties, making this a must-see location for history buffs. Highlights of the castle include Argyll's Lodging, the country's most complete example of a 17th century townhouse, the Tapestry Studio, where artists have been hard at work recreating the magnificent unicorn tapestries that hang in the palace, the Great Kitchens, the Palace Vaults, which are geared toward younger visitors, and the sunny and peaceful Queen Anne's Garden. Along with all that history, you'll enjoy shopping, great eats, and more in this cosmopolitan city with a small-town feel. And nearby Stirling, the brand-new Battle of Bannockburn Visitor Centre puts you at the heart of the action with state-of-the-art digital exhibitions and activities. And then there's the National Wallace Monument, Stirling's famous landmark commemorating the life and legacy of William Wallace. There you can see Wallace's mighty claymore sword, listen to his trial, and climb to the crown for spectacular views of the region. On a visit to Scotland in 2010, my wife and I were impressed with the castle and the city. There's so much to enjoy in and around Stirling. It's easy to see why it's one of my favourite destinations in Scotland. From Stirling, we head east into the Kingdom of Fife and onto the coastal town of St Andrews, a place of history, learning and culture. St Andrews University, founded in 1413, is Scotland's oldest university and the third oldest in the English-speaking world, behind only Oxford and Cambridge. St Andrews alumni include such luminaries as John Wilson, inventor of logarithms, James Wilson, one of the fathers of the American Constitution, James Black, Nobel Prize winner, Faye Weldon, a novelist, Alex Salmond, the politician, Chris Hoy, the cyclist, and in the early years of the 21st century, Prince William and Catherine Middleton, now the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. While the university is a vital component of the town, there is so much more that makes St Andrews distinct. Its name is synonymous with golf. The world-famous Royal and Ancient Golf Club, the birthplace of modern golf, is here, as is the iconic Old Course that draws the sports greats from all over the world. Visitors to St Andrews can be inspired by the town's motto, Dum spiro spiro, while I breathe, I hope. And everyone who comes to town, whether a film star, a sports hero, an aspiring student, or a family on holiday, will receive an equal welcome from the locals and benefit from their renowned hospitality. When I visit St Andrews, one of my favourite activities is a walk along the West Sands, 2 miles of uninterrupted beach adjacent to the golf course where the famous opening sequence of the film Chariots of Fire was filmed. You can't go wrong with a visit to St Andrews, one of my favourite destinations in Scotland. Now it's time to head north, to the heart of the Scottish Highlands. The town of Aviemore is the gateway to Cairngorms National Park, the UK's largest national park. This resort town was a frequent choice for my family on our weekenders and holidays. There's such natural beauty and diversity on display here. For fans of the Disney Pixar film Brave, Cairngorms National Park could quite literally be the home of Merida, King Fergus and Queen Eleanor. Experience much of what the film depicts, Ancient forests, castles, waterfalls, Highland games, snow-capped mountains, expansive lochs, quiet glens, Highland cows, wolves, wildcats, and more. You can even learn archery with skilled bowmen at Craggan Outdoors, or take a horse ride through ancient Caledonian pine forests at Rothiemurchus. If you like skiing and other winter sports, Aviemore's your place. And there's biking, hiking, and climbing galore during the summer months. A number of accommodation options are available in and around Aviemore, including hotels, chalets, lodges, bed and breakfasts, and even a hostel for those on a tight budget. I can personally vouch for the hostel, having stayed there myself a few times. The Cairngorm reindeer herd is Britain's only herd of reindeer, found free-ranging in the Cairngorm Mountains. At the Reindeer Centre, visitors can visit and feed the reindeer and learn more about this beautiful animal. In a few minutes, we round out our journey with a visit to the wee village of John O'Groats and the majestic Isle of Skye. First, here's music from award-winning folk rock band Skerry Vohr. From their 2012 album World of Chances, this is It Feels Like Rain.
Let's take a walk once again. Take a stroll on the flooded roadside. There's no blue in the sky, 'cause today it feels like rain. But I won't waste my time feeling sorry for myself and the weather. It's the same almost every day. Take the rough with the smooth, 'cause today it feels like rain. Let's go outside.
You're listening to Simply Scottish. The second last of my top 10 Scottish destinations is John O'Groats. Compared to the treasures of Edinburgh and Stirling, John O'Groats may seem a strange addition to the top 10 list, but as I said, these are my favourite places in Scotland, based on my childhood and travel experiences with my family. As such, this isn't the same top 10 list as you might find in a guidebook. The village of John O'Groats is on the northeastern tip of Scotland, one end of the longest distance between two inhabited points on the island of Great Britain. John O'Groats is 876 miles from England's Land's End. The village takes its name from Jan de Groot, the Dutchman who first obtained a grant from James IV in 1496 to operate a ferry to Orkney. In recent decades, this small outpost has fallen into disrepair, and as recently as 2010, it was named the most dismal place in Scotland by Urban Realm magazine. But lately, efforts have increased to beautify the village and make it more visitor-friendly. Natural Retreats, a company specializing in eco-friendly accommodations that celebrate their natural surroundings, has renovated the old hotel, turning it into self-catering apartments. They've also built new three-bedroom lodges overlooking the sea, a cafe, and an outfitter's activity and retail centre, making things more accommodating for tourists as well as bikers who make the long trek from Land's End. To learn more about the new developments from Natural Retreats, visit www.naturalretreats.com and click on their John O'Groats property. In the end, it's the natural beauty around John O'Groats that really makes the place worth a visit. As the Guardian newspaper points out in a recent profile, the region has plenty of unspoiled coast, from the tranquil sands of Dunnet Beach, an increasingly popular destination for surfers, to the towering rock stacks of Duncan's Behead, where the Pentland Firth meets the North Sea in a rolling boil of angry waters. From May to September, a regular ferry to the Orkney Islands is available, as are daily wildlife touring cruises, taking you past rugged cliff scenery to see colonies of guillemots, puffins, razorbills, kittiwakes, Atlantic grey seals, and occasionally orca and killer whales. I distinctly remember two things in particular about my visits to John O'Groats: the wildlife boat cruise and delicious bacon rolls made by a local food vendor. And one of the best things about John O'Groats? You're a 40-minute ride away from the Orkney Islands, a world steeped in history and natural wonder. We'll go into more detail about the Northern Isles, Orkneys and Shetlands, on another episode. For now, our journey concludes with a visit to Scotland's Western Isles and the Isle of Skye. Recently voted fourth best island in the world by National Geographic magazine, Skye is the second largest island in Scotland after Lewis and Harris. Skye's coastline is a collection of peninsulas and bays. The rocky slopes of the Coulins provide some of the most dramatic mountain scenery in the country. The island boasts 12 Munros, mountains over 3,000 feet, making it a favourite for hill walkers and climbers. One walk I recommend is the Old Man of Stour, a large pinnacle of rock that stands high and can be seen from miles around. It's part of a rocky summit on the Trotternish Peninsula overlooking the Sound of Rasay. The walk begins about 10 minutes outside Portree, Skye's main town, and takes a good 2 hours to complete. Once again, history is ever present on Skye. Dotted around the island, you'll find a number of brochs, Pictish round towers built over 2,000 years ago. Dunvegan Castle is the oldest inhabited castle in Scotland, home to the chiefs of the Clan MacLeod. The Christian missionary St. Columba established monastic communities on Skye, modelled after the centre he had established on Iona. The ancient site of St. Columba's Isle is the most significant of these. It housed a cathedral and abbey and was the seat of the Bishop of the Isles from the 10th to the 16th century. You'll find abandoned homes and settlements around the island too, evidence of families affected by the Highland clearances, an era of forced expulsion of Highlanders from the land they lived and worked on during the 18th and 19th centuries. The Skye Bridge, opened in 1995, connects Skye to the mainland. Before that, you crossed on a ferry, from Kyle of Lochalsh to the village of Kyleakin. On my last trip to Scotland, my wife and I stayed at a wee hotel in Kyleakin. At night, the pub next door offers karaoke, and I remember singing Dougie MacLean's folk song, Caledonia, which I dedicated both to my beloved homeland, but also to my young daughter, Caledonia. And that concludes our journey to my 10 favourite destinations in Scotland. Again, if you missed part one of this series, you'll find it at our website, simplyscottish.com. Next, discover Scotland's role in the Commonwealth Games as we share highlights from Scottish Memories magazine. Right now, this is Emily Smith with a beautiful song called The Sower's Song.
Now hands to seed sheet, boys, we step and we cast, old times only. Partake of harvest joys, the seed we sow in spring. Old earth is a pleasure to see, and sunshine cloak of red and green. This year the furrow will be as years that are past have been. Fall gently and still, good corn, lie warm in your earthy bed. Stand so yellow some bright morn, for man and beast must be fed. Old mother, receive this corn, the son of 6,000 golden sires. On thy kindly breast was born, one more your child requires. Now steady and sure we go, with measure of stroke and step we keep.
If you're enjoying the music on today's show, enter our monthly music giveaway for your chance to win a Scottish album of your choice from a catalogue of over 4,000, courtesy of musicscotland.com. You can enter online at our website, simplyscottish.com. In a recent issue of Scottish Memories magazine celebrating the 2014 Commonwealth Games, Dr. Fiona Skillen of Glasgow Caledonian University and Dr. Matthew McDowell of Edinburgh University look back on the event and reveal Scotland's role in shaping the Games. Scotland has competed in the Commonwealth Games, originally called the British Empire Games, since their inception in 1930. The country has hosted the event three times, 1970, 1986, and 2014. Over 1,300 competitors from 42 countries gathered in Edinburgh in July of 1970 for what would come to be known as the Friendly Games, due to the welcome given to athletes, officials, and spectators by the people of Scotland. In 1986, Edinburgh once again hosted the Games. This time, the issue of apartheid brought debate and tension, with dozens of nations boycotting the occasion. Despite the controversy, over 1,600 athletes participated, and Scotland won 33 medals, including 3 gold. In 2014, Glasgow hosts the 20th Commonwealth Games. With 261 events across 14 venues, it's the largest multi-sport event ever held in Scotland. Through participation and hosting, Scotland has helped define this multinational sporting event and helped to make it the memorable experience it is today. To read more articles covering Scotland's heritage and history, subscribe to Scottish Memories magazine or the sister publication History Scotland magazine. Find details about both at www.celebrate-scotland.co.uk. We'll conclude today's show with an air from Coila, led by three-time Scottish national fiddle champion Alistair McCulloch. This is Herr Roloff's Farewell. I'm Andrew McDermott. Join me again soon for another celebration of all things Scottish.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.